gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting. Oh, wait a minute, that's not what I'm supposed to say. I'm supposed to say, good afternoon, everyone. And welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, rbnrepublicbroadcasting.org. It is the home of free speech, where free thinking, free speaking people get together and we go fishing or whatever. And sometimes the fish are biting and sometimes they're not. Sometimes you just get your line tangled up in the rocks or whatever happens. But what you can do is you can go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send a donation to keep free speech alive, because free speech isn't cheap. It's not cheap. And then go to nationalbugle.com. That's the home of the Co-Certified app. You can download that app. You will be glad you did. It's, I don't know, it's like $2.99, maybe with inflation $3.99. If you have a Android phone, if you have a iPhone, forget it. You'll have to use it online, but you can use it online for free, and you'll be glad you did. Okay, today we have with us our the host of the show right before mine, the Beyond the Official Narrative, and Richard Carey. Richard, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Patrick. Thank you for that introduction.
I know, that's how I was planning on starting it up, but just my instinct kicked in and I did my usual thing. Right. But yeah, good and with that David Bowie music. What's the name of that song?
Oh, it's called 1984.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, it was like a concept live album from like 1974, I want to say, or
1975. I don't remember it.
It was just a concept album called Diamond Dogs, from like 74 or 75.
Diamond Dogs. Yeah. I probably saw it in the used record store at some point.
Right.
I liked David Bowie, but I don't think I ever bought any of his records. But, he had a good voice. I remember that whole fame. He had a very big range in his voice.
And he reinvented himself a lot of times with different sounds throughout the decades, really.
You know, yeah, different sounds and different looks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, David Bowie. Okay, well, so my listeners know that for the past couple of weeks, I have often referred back to something. It was probably an off-the-hand remark that you, off-the-cuff remark you said in response to an assertion by one of your co-hosts, you know, because we talk about all sorts of stuff, and you said, we have a hard enough time convincing people about the things that we have the most evidence about. And yeah. I thought, you know, that's really insightful. Because we do. We have a hard... So there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff that people believe and a lot of stuff that's true. And yet, not everything's easy to convince people about. And yet... Oh, no, it wasn't just that. You said, we have a hard enough time convincing people about the most important things that we have the most evidence about. That was it. Most important things, and we have the most evidence about them. And even then, we have a hard time.
It's so true. I mean, when we look at... Well, I remember 9/11 podcasts I've watched in the past covering just so much information they've compiled. And I'd see it coming up again and again. I mean, there were a lot of common pieces of information from multiple sources, pretty well-vetted sources, to show all the irregularities. And now it's, what, 20 years later? And has it changed anything? And so, yeah, now when I see all this election fraud getting ignored, for example, I have to wonder, yeah, 20 years from now, is that really going to, you know, ever even be looked at as far as the history books are concerned?
So, you know, with the election, this past week, I was doing a lot of driving, and I wanted to listen to the whole thing of Mike Lindell's Absolute Proof, which is, I guess, 2 hours long. It's his Absolute Proof. Well, you know, I watched a lot of Rudy Giuliani's presentations to state legislators regarding the things like, well, mostly regarding on-site election irregularities. So all the places where election poll watchers were not allowed to watch. And, you know, we've got that's one of the most important things. And we got a lot of evidence because we got a lot of video of people being kept out, people, the election workers putting up, paper over windows so the poll watchers can't see them, what they're doing. I mean, we just got people, you know, the suitcases being wheeled out from under tables. We've got all sorts of stuff about that. And of course, regarding the change of election laws, I mean, that was totally out in the open. The unconstitutional change in election laws by governors, secretaries of state, by judges, by consent decrees with what's her name, that fat lady with the gap in her teeth from Georgia, Stacey Abrams, by everybody except state legislators, who constitutionally are the only people who can set the laws for presidential elections. We have most evidence about the most important things. I watched that because there's the election machine issue, you know, with the vote flipping and whatever. And Sidney Powell was always talking about that. And I'm sympathetic to that. I have the feeling that there probably was some of that. But Sidney Powell was never able to explain adequately what happened, nor was Lynn Wood. They always said, oh, well, we've got these great experts. Well, okay, then put the great experts out in front and say, oh, we got the algorithms. Well, show us the algorithms. And I never felt like I saw that. So what do you make of that, for instance?
Yeah, we're going to release the Kraken. I mean, what was that but theatrics? You have to wonder in retrospect. It seemed like she had everything ready to go, but then it was just keeping us on the edge of our seats as long as possible, perhaps, just like the effect a lot of the QAnon, phenomenon has on a lot of people. I don't know. You know, I mean, recently, suddenly she came out under strong attack and she caved pretty heavily. Isn't that right?
I saw a headline to that effect. Now, my kind of default guess about her is she probably had a fair amount of evidence prepared for court, you know, expert witnesses and whatnot that she trusted that she might not have completely understood, but she may well have been prepared to make a court case and just simply never got the chance and wasn't prepared to make a media case, which she had a chance to make, but she wasn't prepared to make a media case. She was only prepared to make a court case, and they are two different things. That's kind of giving her the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, if I was a betting man, maybe I bet that's what it was. But in retrospect, did that discredit the whole election fraud project the way some of the flakier stuff tended to discredit 9/11 truthers? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I don't know. If she maybe contributed to, at least, I mean, there were a lot of varied reports of the election fraud irregularities, again, as they always like to refer to it as. But I mean, to varying degrees of concrete evidence or firsthand accounts, like you just reference, I mean, the things we have the most evidence of and are the most important, you know, I mean, as far as the election fraud, that seemed like a headache. If you were to look at all the different states, look at all the different pieces of election fraud evidence and decide, well, you know, what here could help and what here could actually perhaps be either wasting time or maybe do more harm if it isn't enough substantiated and just makes all of it as a whole therefore look bad if it's included. But I mean basically they're looking into the fraud now on the state by state level still as far as what they can do for future elections. And I don't know, it seems like it's just too little too late.
And, yeah, too little, too late.
Yeah.
Well, that was my feeling. Too little, too late. And really, but pretty close. I thought things, we got pretty close. Like on January 6th, when we were talking, when you were in studio and I was on the Capitol lawn, you know, by the time my show started, we were talking about this. And I think if you went back and re-listened to the show, like it already seemed as if the Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz weren't going to, there was a way forward, which was to object to all the votes from all the states. Right. And that would give 2 weeks. That would give you 2 weeks where you'd be able to present all of this evidence in the debating sessions after, you know, objecting to each state. And it would give, you know, the Wisconsin legislature was due to meet the next day to vote on decertifying the Biden electors. But by 2 p.m., by showtime, by the time the Oath Keepers and those people busted in and whatever, it was clear that they weren't going to follow that strategy. They were doing a different strategy, which was mainly just for show, that it would probably delay certification of the election by one day. But, you know, I don't know. So it seemed pretty much by 2 p.m., by showtime, that it was and, you know, they had started counting the votes. I think they started counting the votes at 1 p.m. So it really kind of looked like game over already, but it wasn't really the right way to end. I don't know. But
we couldn't have guessed that in the middle of the night they would have already sealed the deal like they did.
I was kind of surprised at that.
Yeah.
That they went back in the middle of the night. Maybe I shouldn't have been. I figured they'd go back the next day and do it, but they didn't in the middle of the night.
But
yeah. So but here's the thing. You do have Wisconsin, Arizona, maybe Michigan. I haven't been following it that closely, but you got some states, Georgia, that are going to be going back and looking at things. And even though it's not as if they're going to reverse the election and Trump will be in the White House, I think it could be very, very significant, because it could wind up delegitimizing our fake president. And in particular, because the fake president is already senile, and they're going to want to at some point, or they're going to need to, because it's getting obvious, they're going to need to push him out. Well, how do you push him out? How do you get him to resign for health reasons or 25th Amendment him without, you know, without people looking at Chlamydia Harris and Tony Blinken and these other people who helped steal the election as co-conspirators in the worst conspiracy in American history? And if they're looked at by such a large portion of the American population as co-conspirators in this massive crime, then what happens, right? And so the review of votes in these states could feed into this. And then what happens? Then do you have various states say, hey, we're not going to bow to the sovereignty of the federal government as long as it's in the hands of usurpers? You can get a constitutional crisis. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, I heard Mr. Stadmiller bring up the idea of secession regarding Texas being a bad strategy, because then it would be just them against the rest of the U.S. and certainly would be a target. I don't know, for any state, I can see his point on that. I don't really see states going all out in trying to secede, anything that extreme, but somewhere close to that, where they completely reject the Biden-Harris regime before the 4 years is up, it could be the best odds we have as far as, I don't know. I mean, the amount of spending that has already happened, if we were going to also consider that in the discussion, it seems like that damage is irreversible. And, you know, that could be the biggest threat our country is going to be facing, really. It's just the decline in the dollar reserve currency, living standards. I don't know if you think that would come to fruition in our lifetimes.
Well, okay, if it's going to come in our what could happen within the next year or two, and Texas declaring independence, I tend to share John Stadtmiller's view on that. But if you look back, I've raised the issue of South Carolina in, I guess, 1831 with a Nullification Act, where they were saying that they nullified the federal tariff, which they were expected to collect. The most profitable customs house was the one in Charleston Harbor, right? Which was in Fort Sumner was right there, and there are a lot of tariffs that were collected at the expense of South Carolina and other southern states because of their trade with Britain, and they nullified and said, look, we're sovereign. It wasn't declaring independence from the United States, but declaring sovereignty. And the same thing was happening in the Soviet Union, where you were having, before countries were declaring independence, they were declaring themselves sovereign, saying, okay, well, we're still in the Soviet Union, but we're sovereign. I don't know if it looks like that in 2021, but the various countries in the EU are still regarded as sovereign, that they have the final word on things, even though they've delegated so much decision-making to the EU. So you had that in Russia, and as a matter of fact, in the summer, in August of 1991, President Gorbachev, he went back to his dacha and drew up a treaty that was going to be a new union treaty and was going to rename the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. It was going to rename it the Union of Soviet Sovereign Republics. And then, of course, there was a coup d'etat attempt against him, then a counter coup, and then everything fell apart. But that was what was going on. And so here are a couple of scenarios. One is states saying, okay, well, we're not declaring independence, but we're sovereign. We have the final word. Now, one thing in the Soviet Union, taxes were collected on the republic basis, and then they were sent into the union. I think the money flows more the opposite direction in America, so that's a tool that the American states don't have. But let's just say Ron DeSantis, he uses the National Guard for something, and Joe Biden tries to nationalize the National Guard, and he says no. And then what? Right. So those are a couple of things I'm raising. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know if they're really going to need to use the troops to reinforce their policies.
Well, let's just say, OK, because Ron DeSantis kind of mentioned something like that. But let's just say one of the states on the Mexican border deploys its National Guard to keep out a convoy. And then Biden says, you can't do that. And he says, yes, I can. Do you think that is a possible scenario?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, as far as the U.S. policies with their neighboring countries, it's pretty hypocritical. But at the same time, we do have from Mexico, I mean, already, complaints about the disregard that Biden and just the Democrats have toward the border situation, and there are a lot of concerns as far as the people who come from south of Mexico.
Yeah,
I understand that being a factor, where the Mexican president even I think maybe has commented at times that it does more harm.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, we're right up at the break, but we'll be back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
And we are back. So earlier in the show, you mentioned in passing 9/11. And, you know, we're talking about the most important things that we have the most evidence about. So with 9/11 was obviously a huge turning point in the history of our republic. And, you know, I remember at the time, well, I don't know exactly what happened in terms of that afternoon or that morning. But I do know that after that, the events were used to justify these crazy wars, the Patriot Act, the clamping down on our freedoms in what seemed like an unimaginable way, but now you can be kind of nostalgic for it, like, oh, wasn't that cute, you know, the way they were taking away our powers, our liberties. But there was a whole lot of focus on, you know, not what it led to, but the minutiae of what happened on that day, do you have a strong opinion on what happened on that day, and B, what do you make of the truther movement and its success or lack thereof?
Well, if I could answer the second question first, I'd say that the 9/11 movement certainly added new fuel and energy to the independent research, the truther community. I mean, I don't even really think like a term like truther community was used prior to 9/11. Of course, you had conspiracy researchers, right? That was the official JFK COINTELPRO term, if you will. And, you know, people like William Cooper out there. But once 9/11 happened, Now, certainly there were a lot of people who gradually, some took just, you know, minutes or hours, as I've heard some report. Others were suspicious more within months or a couple of years, even others a decade or more start finding out or have interest to start looking into. But it's it's definitely made it a lot more fashionable in a, I don't know, in a true altruistic sense to look into so-called conspiracy theories, which very often turn out to be conspiracy facts. A theory is needed first. Well, I mean, to the extent that you could call it ever proven, I mean, it depends on who your peers are at the moment and, you know, what the consensus could be. As far as what happened on that day, I mean, I find a lot of the evidence leading up to that day just as fascinating. Weeks prior, for example, different areas of the towers that were shut down and had a lot of companies, Israeli linked, who were working on changing a lot of the was it security systems or some types of wiring, or and needed to shut down all the sections, cameras, and you know, any sort of recording capability in the process. The money, of course, that was announced missing from the Pentagon, what was it, like $3 trillion?
Massive amount. And that Dov Zakheim he's a dual citizen if there ever was one. I don't think that's conspiracy theory. I think that's out in the open. And he was the Comptroller General of the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm. And then the amount of war notice. We had a lot of Israelis who didn't show up for work that day. We had even just the purchasing of the building with the asbestos problem and the need to take that out being just a financial headache, making it very undesirable for purchase, the insurance purchased on the building. There were a lot of very curious factors that you just don't hear out in normal media sources. But yeah, the people who really compile these excellent websites and videos said a great deal of information just even leading up to that day. So I found that just as fascinating as far as just how much it was incriminating. I mean, even the building where all of these files to look into where that missing money went, in one of the crash sites was taken out in the process. So I mean, you know, that's certainly more than a coincidence. So I don't know. So certain little key factors like those alone are very suspicious.
So yeah, it makes it fishy. Mm-hmm. So Howard Zinn, who is a historian, a Chomskyite, you know, kind of a neo-Marxist or whatever, and he had once said something like he doesn't care about 9/11 or doesn't care if it's an inside job. And there was like a big people were freaking out at that. But the thing is, the people on the left, and that was me, nobody trusted the government in the first place. And so a false flag or inside job just wouldn't be that shocking to a leftist the way it was. The people who got big into the 9/11 truth movement were people who were like ex-military. And they had to deal with either they were working for, you know, when they were in the military, they were working for the bad guys, or there was something that, like, okay, they were good guys up until 9/11, and then there was this massive coup d'etat. So those are the people that had that's why I think you had the 9/11 truth movement being right wing and being focused on those narrow events. But at any rate, we're up on the break, and we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Thank you. Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite 7 herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, KosherTified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher-certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out the kosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the KosherTified app can make a huge difference for your future.
And we are back. And so we have a hard enough time convincing people of the most important things that we have the most amount of evidence about. The George Floyd trial is starting. George Floyd, it's bigger than just this guy. Obviously, George Floyd was used almost as like a 9/11 type of thing to unleash the Black Lives Matter riots, to turn up the anti-whiteness, for the anti-whiteness to go from being kind of stealth and in the background to in your face. I don't usually turn into Tucker Carlson to get hot takes, but he has some guy, Matt Walsh, who I've never thought had particularly hot takes, but he commented that Black Lives Matter isn't really even a black organization. It's a radical LGBTQ organization, which is only partly true, but it's a part truth that most people haven't thought of. And so I thought that was a pretty good point. So we've got the evidence that, I mean, absolute proof that these four cops found George Floyd, who was overdosing, and they were trying to save his life, and he had a heart attack while they were going through the police procedures to save Floyd's life. And that's any fair jury is going to have to acquit them. But what do you think is going to happen with this?
Oh, well, these are just a continuing set of appeasements, you know, for equity, the people who want to see justice for George Floyd. So-called justice are, they're Marxists, like you mentioned. They're never going to
get enough. Did I say they're Marxists?
Okay.
No, LGBTQ radicals, although the you know Black Lives Matter, the women were trained Marxists or something.
Yes. Yeah. So I mean, they're trained in their tactics and pretty much to serve their goals. I think it would be safe to say, I'd say that the Black Lives Matter movement is trying to hijack the angst they're building in the Black community due to the misinformation propagated out there. And they're trying to channel that toward their goals. I don't know. Perhaps Marxist wouldn't be completely accurate, but like as you say, some of the female leaders were trained.
Pretty accurate. I'm sensitive about the calling everything communist or socialist or whatever because that's been kind of a red herring. Although in the case of these three lesbian women black women who are the nominal founders of Black Lives Matter, they actually do have a pretty strong Marxist identity.
And as far as the country, I mean, couldn't you say that socially it's under a Bolshevik Marxist sort of a takeover strategy? But politically, it's more of a corporatist sort of, a crony capitalist, as some like to call it, approach. Is that what, would that be a way of putting it?
So on Stormfront, Don Black used to refer to the Sovietization of the United States. And that was something I kind of pushed back at because the Soviets, if you look at the 74 years of Soviet history, it had a lot of different phases. But the Soviet Union of the Cold War, the Soviet Union that we were trained to hate, that we were taught to hate, was really just kind of a run-of-the-mill, rather oppressive, but not anything... Like the oppressive days, the super oppressive days of the Soviet Union were the early Bolshevik days, and then, you know, there was kind of like Stalin's Red Terror or something. But during the Cold War, it was just more or less basically a run-of-the-mill repressive dictatorship, like a lot of dictatorships around the world during those years, with a very inefficient economic system. What we're heading into isn't anything like the Soviet Union of the Cold War. And so we had some back and forth on it. And then he started talking about neo-Bolshevism. And that I was more amenable to because, what was the real nature of Bolshevism? Well, frankly, it was a Jewish ethnic attack on white Christians. And that's the thing. The when you say Marx, when somebody says Marxist, I mean, strictly speaking, that would have to do with the writings of Marx. It would have to do with either the economic system, the view of history, these progression through modes of production and whatnot. And I don't think that has a whole lot to teach us about what's going on today. Lots of Marx's disciples had lots of different things to say about all sorts of things. One of the reasons I'm so sensitive about people throwing around Marxist or communist so much is that, what we're headed into is something very, very different from any communism in the past. And B, there's all this ramping up of hostility against China, which is ruled by a party that calls itself the Communist Party, still calls itself the Communist Party, but it has undergone a massive transformation after the death of Mao into, something that is based, even though they still have Mao's portrait up in Tiananmen Square, the founder of modern China is Deng Xiaoping. and his philosophy was pragmatism. And where does pragmatism lead you? Into a kind of national socialism. I think really China is more national socialist than any kind of 20th century communism. And here's one thing about that's very different about modern China as opposed to all of the communist experiments of the 20th century is the economics of China works. And the Chinese people have become, well, in some areas, very, very rich. Hong Kong is one of the richest cities in the world. And although it uses a different economic system, so that doesn't prove much. But the Chinese population in general has gone from being extremely poor, Africa-style poor almost, to pretty middle class, and they're doing a lot better. And that doesn't sound too communist to me as somebody who's a boomer and learned about communism during the Cold War. So that's kind of why I push back about it. And what we're going into now, I think, is new. Whatever it is, it's neo-something. I don't know what it's neo. I have a friend who calls it neo-feudal. Maybe that's good. Neo-Bolshevik, maybe that's okay. It's neo-something else, something, because it is new. What do you think of that?
Well, it helped me to clarify the distinction you were making, the way you phrased it one time, I think, where you were complimenting Don Black's invention, if you will, of neo-Bolshevism. I think you said, if I remember correctly, communism related more to class and economic warfare, and there was a distinctly racial component in the Bolshevik tactics throughout history, and that's why it would be part of why it would be more fitting. So like social as well, I suppose, so racial component and social social component. Would that be?
Well, I mean, the racial component of it wasn't something that came from Marx, but the first communist ruling party was the Bolshevik Party, and that was a Jewish takeover. And I mean, it wasn't only Jews who were in the ruling class, but it was predominantly Jews, and they used that system as a weapon against the white Christians. And what's going on now, all the stuff that's going on now, which the economics isn't anything like Bolshevism, but everything that's going on now, you just look at it and it's a weapon being weaponized against white people. Right. I mean, whether we're talking about George Floyd, whether we're talking about, economic lockdowns, no matter what we're talking about, whether it's everything seems to be weaponized against white people. And I don't. Isn't it? I mean, what are the big things that are going on? White people are demonized. Even talk about the stolen election. Wasn't the whole Capitol, the Occupy Congress event, the awesome Occupy Congress event, wasn't that white supremacy? That seems to be the main theme, is nothing having to do with socialism. The main theme seems to be demoralizing white people and defeating once and for all white people as the the rightful inhabitants of this country. I don't know if those are the best words, but I hope you get the gist.
No, absolutely. And on so many fronts, politically, we have a complete bias that really seems at this point to just be trying to provoke a response. I mean, I was just mentioning earlier today that there is some privately funded group in California, I think Oakland, mm-hmm. and it's trying to give money universal basic income to people who have children.
Question. Have you found who is funding this? Because we've been talking about this, but who's doing the funding?
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, I did get some of that. Let me just pull up the the article here, but it's fascinating how, I mean, it just straight out is saying that as long as you have a child and you're under a certain income bracket, you'll qualify for this money, but you won't qualify if you're white.
Right. And the bracket is 59,000. Half the people are supposed to be under 30,000, which means half the people would be between 30 and 59,000 for a family of three. 59,000 for a family of three is almost 300% of federal poverty level, and that's not particularly poor. But you get money if you're, you know, it's not for every single person. What, they're gonna pick 600 families or something?
Yes, yeah. But they're gonna be picked randomly from the people who are enrolled. You know, who submits there. Right, but no whites.
And where's the money coming from?
Oakland Resilient Families Program has so far raised $6.75 million from private donors, including Blue Meridian Partners, a national philanthropy group, among others, obviously.
Blue, and who's in Blue Meridian Partners, do you know?
From the bit of searching Paul Stevenson did earlier with me on my show, it seemed like it did have a lot of Jewish organization at the top, actually.
Imagine our surprise.
I was a bit shocked and dismayed, for sure, Patrick.
Yeah, shocked. Okay. Well, and yeah, a lot of people are talking about this, and of course, it's not coming from taxpayers. Okay, so you got some Jewish groups, but here's the thing. The next thing you know, just like with the whole Black Lives Matter shakedown from last summer, the next thing you know, they're going to be getting mega, you know, $100 million from Amazon, $100 million from Apple. And where does that money come from? Right? I mean, that money comes from not taxpayers directly, but from a very, very broad swath of people that that white people make up the main portion of.
And then another story I came across of a health insurance company that just openly admitting to discriminating against white people.
Which company?
Let me bring this one up as well. I might need a moment. Okay, SIGNA, Cigna.
Yeah, Cigna. Really?
Admits to being a racist health insurance company that discriminates against white men. It didn't admit that as far as the people whom it's taking on as clients, as that it's insuring for. But it just meant the employees.
Okay.
The employees. It has a strong critical race theory incorporated into its employment infrastructure.
And Cigna is certainly one of the top 10 in health insurance companies in America. It might be like number five. It's up there. It's a big one. But, you know, if you ever call in regarding your health insurance, call into a lot of banking centers often, but the health insurance companies, probably maybe even more, you get these call centers and so many, and especially if you call into healthcare.gov. I don't know if you've ever called into, if you have Obamacare or whatever, you ever call into healthcare.gov, and odds are you're going to get somebody talking to you in Ebonics who really doesn't know what's going on and just keeps going through these set phrases. And if you want to get anything done, you just have to politely say, I'd like to speak to a supervisor. They will let you speak to a supervisor. There is a lot of that. So I'm not too surprised. Okay. And, yeah.
Well, and just the focus, of course, on predominantly white nations with the multiculturalism, the immigration quotas. You don't hear much of that pressure for many non-white countries. I mean, I've heard about it regarding Japan, that they're putting up resistance, but there's been some pressure on them from international sources. So we couldn't imagine who they would be. But on Japan to accept a more non-Japanese immigration. But I could see why they would be a target, considering they were among the primary Axis powers.
Well, I'll say both Japan and South Korea, last times I've been to those countries, I was surprised at how many more, not just like, when you used to say foreigners, it would be like U.S. service people or U.S., you know, white-looking businessmen. But now you're seeing, you know, Bangladeshis and Southeast Asians, and you're actually seeing in both countries, but in Japan in particular, a big uptick in immigration. But you know, these people, when you say immigration, they're not getting citizenship, but a lot of them are there to stay. And it is, if they don't get their act together soon, they're going to be in the same boat that we are. Okay, well, we're right up at the break, but we'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
And we are back. All right, I want to just get back to the theme. What are the things that we should be talking about because we've got the best evidence and they're the most important? What are some things maybe, if you want to touch on, that we should avoid? But, you know, even when you avoid things, like I really cringe when I hear people throwing Hitler under the bus, you know, throwing out that Hitler thing or whatever. It's like, what's the point in vilifying Hitler? You might say, okay, well, let's not talk about Hitler. Let's not talk about World War II. Well, then let's not talk about it. Let's not use Hitler or whatever, Jim Crow as the boogeyman. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, depending on the time, place, content, your audience, there's only so much constructive debate as far as the strategy, like you keep pointing out, to talk about what National Socialism politics or economics or, you know, the truths of World War II or Adolf Hitler. But at the same time, yeah, throwing him under the bus, I cringe as much as you do. And I can't stand people who will just complain about everything around us right now, which is reminiscent of the Bolshevik revolution in Russia or Weimar Germany. But then they'll be always blaming Hitler. And as an example of what we're seeing now, the tyranny or trying to just demonize anyone who would be traditional or nationalist as the source of the problems today, or white supremacy, of course. But, you know, the people who talk about, like, race war, I don't know. I'd say that's definitely something to avoid, where you're just not – you're not really helping, and you're fueling the, you know, the opposition. As far as talking about the controllers, I mean, like you say, how can you really understand what's going on with politics and the political correct agendas today without addressing Jewish power? But you just want to do it very constructively, I suppose, and not, I guess, make it come off as something that's just more unable to be proven. I do like how Dr. Duke always will try to use their own words, you know, of the Jewish community in a lot of what he'll reinforce.
Well, here's something I try to do in my personal life, because, you know, I know a lot of normies, and I'm talking to a normie, and I'm not going to start off talking about Jewish power to them. I might talk about the coronavirus, might talk about George Floyd, the election, whatever. And then, you know, if it gets to the point where they say, well, why would they do such a thing? I say, well, listen, Bert, you look into what we've talked about today. And if you agree, if you come to agree with me, that, yeah, the election does seem to have been stolen, or, yeah, our elites really do seem to be against us. If you feel that the elites are against us and then you want to ask why, then we'll talk about it at that point. You know, like, people have to they have to be aware of the problems before they can be aware of the root causes of the problems. Does that make any sense?
Well, that makes absolute sense. Yeah, I mean, you want people to come to you for further information. You can't try to put the cart in front of the horse for them, right?
Yeah, and there's a limit to how much people can digest in one session, in one period of time.
Yeah, that's very well put. By the way, that was 2.3 trillion Donald Rumsfeld admitted being missing from the Pentagon the day prior. And then the other thing I was pointing out was the insurance policy on the Twin Towers. Larry Silverstein took out this $3.5 billion insurance policy only weeks before. That was another good point.
Very convenient. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but we'll have to do this again sometime soon.
That sounds great, Dr. Slater.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Media Radio.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356, or shoot him an email at domedan, domedan at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.